Dear Marnie, Meg, Amy, and Beth, I have so much to tell you. I love it here, and have so much time to write my story. One of these days, you're going to be very proud of yours, Joe.
Remember those characters, Meg, Amy, Beth, and Joe, Marnie, their mother, and the story of their lives?
Sure, they're from Little Women. Tell it again.
Tell it again. Transcribing the great stories we all know and love. Today, Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. And we tell it again. In the section of our country known as New England, during the Civil War, there once lived a family by the name of March. It consisted of Mr. March, an army officer in the Northern Forces. Mrs. March, a fine, charitable woman who spent much of her time away from home helping her friends and neighbors. And four girls. This story is really about the four girls, whose names were Meg, Joe, Amy, and Beth. Meg was the eldest, a serious, settled girl who assumed the duties of a mother toward her sisters whenever Mrs. March was called away from home.
Joe, Amy, Beth. Now let's have no more of this nonsense. We're young ladies now and should watch our manners.
Joe was a tomboy, very unhappy at having been born a girl and determined to let the fact interfere with her life as little as possible.
Christopher Columbus, you're all a bunch of nimini-timini chips. I'll whistle all I like, so there.
Oh, Joe. Amy was born to be a princess, or so she thought. She was the prettiest of the four and knew it. Amy affected high airs and large words, many of which she either mispronounced or used in the wrong places.
None of you suffer as I do. You can't know what it is to be laughed at and have your father labeled because he isn't rich.
Labeled? Huh, you mean libeled.
All right, then, libeled. You needn't be satirical about it.
Then there was Beth. Beth was the baby of the family, quiet, sweet, very timid, and not very strong. Beth's main love was music. For a young student, she played the piano quite well. So there you have them. Meg, Joe, Amy, and Beth. When first we meet them, Joe is trying to organize a rehearsal of her latest literary effort. It's a play, a violent, sensational melodrama that she has written for her sisters to perform at a coming social affair.
Come on now, let's rehearse the fainting scene.
What, again?
Yes, Amy, again. You're terrible when you faint. Stiff as a poker.
Well, I must say...
Now, Amy, Joe, we'll either rehearse the play without quarreling or not at all.
But, Meg, she just doesn't know how to faint.
But, George, you'd only tell me what I'm supposed to do.
Christopher Columbus, I've told you a dozen times. When I come in, I'm the villain, Don Pedro. I reach for you with evil intent, and you say, Rodrigo, save me, save me. And faint, that's all.
Well, that sounds simple enough.
What did Beth do? Oh, she's Hagar the Witch. She knows what to do.
Yes, I know what to do.
Now, shall we try?
Oh, 1 second while I fix my hair.
Oh, you and your hair. Joe, stop whistling.
Well, then let's get on with it.
All right, now. Here I come. Don Pedro, reaching for you with evil intent. Ha! Ha ha ha!
Rodrigo, save me, save me. Now I think.
Oh! Christopher Columbus, ain't that awful?
The rehearsal went on with Joe becoming more impatient by the moment and showing the others how to play their parts. And just as it all became hopelessly bogged down, the front door opened and Mrs. March returned home with a letter from their father, which she read at their request.
Tell Meg, Amy, Joe, and Beth that I think of them by day and I pray for them by night. And I find my best comfort in their affection at all times. I know that they will remember to do their duty faithfully, conquer themselves so beautifully that when I come back to them, I may be fonder and prouder of them than ever of my little room.
It was the holiday season now, time for parties and dances, and gay affairs to which the girls looked forward eagerly. At one of these, Joe made the acquaintance of the boy next door, young Laurie Lawrence, grandson of old James Lawrence, a wealthy and respected member of the community. A few days later, Joe decided to pay Laurie a visit, so she presented herself at the Lawrence house.
Hello, Laurie.
Good afternoon.
Oh, you're Brooke, ain't you? I saw you at the party.
Yes, I'm Brooke. I'm Laurie's tutor. He'll be right down. He's expecting you.
All right.
Miss March.
Yes?
I was wondering, I fortunately made the acquaintance of your sister Margaret at the party. I thought I might... Well, do you think she remembers me?
Probably not.
Because I'd like to call on her and... You don't think she remembers me from the party?
I doubt it. Meg's not interested in men, and neither am I. Not that way. So don't bother to call.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Christopher Columbus, moon-faced puppy. Hey, Laurie! Are you coming down or not?
Joe and Laurie had a fine time discussing all the things they didn't like, a subject on which they had much in common. Joe's main tirade was directed against her aunt, a mean old crotchety woman, according to Joe, to whom the family had to be nice and respectful because she was rich. On the other hand, there was Laurie's grandfather, old Mr. Lawrence. Joe had her opinion of him, too.
Of course, he's not as handsome as my grandfather, and he has a tremendous will of his own. But I wouldn't be afraid of him. I think I like him in spite of it.
Indeed.
What? Oh... Laurie, it's your grandfather.
Well, hello, sir. We didn't hear you come in.
So I notice. Who is this? One of the March girls?
Yes, sir. Joe. Josephine.
So you're not afraid of me, eh?
No, sir.
Then I'm not as handsome as your grandfather.
Not quite, sir.
And I've got a tremendous will of my own, have I?
I only said I thought so.
But you like me in spite of everything, do you?
Yes, sir, I do.
You've got spirit, young lady. Laurie and I must call on you and your family one day. We've been neglecting our neighbors. Right, Laurie?
What? Yes, sir. Yes, indeed, sir.
And so the connection between the Marches and the Lawrences was further strengthened and blossomed from neighborliness into friendship and from friendship into love. For it was obvious as time went on that Laurie was very attracted to Joe despite her tomboy ways. And Mr. Brooke, Laurie's tutor, did call on Meg and found that she was interested in men, particularly him. As for Grandfather Lawrence, well, he gave most of his attention to little Beth, especially after he learned she was a music lover and could play the piano.
Good morning, Beth, my dear.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Lawrence. Sir?
And what brings you to town so early?
It's my piano, sir. It's broken again. I'm going to the music store and ask Mr. Collins to come and try and fix it.
Oh, gets out of whack often, does it?
Yes, sir. It's not a very good piano.
I see. Well, now, that just reminds me of something. It happens there's a very large piano in my house. No one ever plays it enough to keep it in tune. I wonder if I could persuade you to come over and do your practicing on it.
Oh, I couldn't. I couldn't play if anyone listened. Outside of Marmy or Meg or Joe or Amy, I mean.
Oh, my dear, I assure you no one would listen to you in my house. Well, there's no one at home during the day except the servants. And just between us, I think they hate music.
Well, in that case...
I'd be much obliged if you would come and play. It would be good for the piano.
Well, all right then, sir. I will.
Good.
Each day from then on, except on Sundays, of course, little Beth went to the Lawrence house and played on a large, wonderful piano. She was so happy with the arrangement that she decided to do something nice for old Mr. Lawrence and show her appreciation. So she made him a beautiful pair of house slippers, which she left in his easy chair one day after she was through practicing.
Then about a week later, when she returned home one afternoon...
Beth, look, it's for you. Mr. Lawrence sent it.
The piano? His piano? You mean he sent it here?
Well, here's a note from him. See, it's addressed to you.
Well, go on, Beth, open it. We're all dying to hear what it says.
All right. It says, Miss March, dear madam, I have had many pairs of slippers in my life, but never any that suited me so well as yours. I like to pay my debts, so I know you will allow the old gentleman to send you something which once belonged to the little granddaughter he lost. With hearty thanks and best wishes, I remain your grateful and humble servant, James Lawrence.
Time passed quickly after that, with Mr. Brooke courting Meg and Laurie spending more and more time with Joe. That is, whenever Joe wasn't locked in her attic writing one of her stories. Beth played her piano, and Amy... Well, Amy just continued trying to look her prettiest and not doing much of anything. Mrs. March's charity work took more and more of her time. It was while she attended a patient one day that Joe raced in, bringing her the news.
Marmy! Marmy!
Yes, Joe, what is it?
It's Father. His telegram just came.
Oh, let me see. Your husband very ill. Come at once. S. Hale. Army Hospital, Washington, D.C. Come, Joe. There's much to be done.
All the girls helped their mother pack and make ready for the trip to Washington. It was also the matter of getting money to pay the fare. Mrs. March sent Joe to her aunt with a request for a loan. But Joe felt that she had to contribute something on her own. It was then that Joe sold her hair. She allowed her long, thick, beautiful hair to be cut off. And she received $40 for it from a barber who made wigs and toupees. She gave the money to Marmy for the trip. And from then on, Joe wore her hair bobbed, giving her more of a boy's appearance than ever. Things started going wrong after that. A few days after Mrs. March had left for Washington...
It's Beth. She's sick. The doctor says she's got scarlet fever.
Now the girls truly became little women, for they watched over Beth, followed the doctor's instructions, and nursed her as well as mother could. And by the time Mrs. March returned, Beth was out of danger, and the March family offered up their thanks to God. Following Beth's recovery, life went along easily for a time. Until Joe discovered just how far the romance between Meg and Mr. Brooke had gone.
Meg, how can you? How can you even think of getting married and going off and leaving us?
Every girl thinks of getting married to the man she loves.
I don't.
You will, my Joe. Someday.
Will not. Christopher Columbus, you're splitting up the family. That's what you're doing.
No, Joe. Just adding to it.
Well, of all the...
Meg! Oh. Joe, guess what? Aunt March is going to Europe, and she's taking me along. Isn't that simply supercilious?
Amy, that's wonderful.
What? Taking you along? Why, the old croak, she always promised to take me when she went.
Joe.
Well, she did. She knows I'm a writer. A writer has to travel and see life and get experience and... I'm sorry, Amy. I'm selfish and mean. Well, of course I'm happy for you. You need to travel and see life, too. Wouldn't want to go with that old fuss budget anyway. I'll go and tell Marmy. She'll be so glad for you.
I can't help it, God. I've always looked forward to going to Europe. It's what I wanted. More than anything else in the world.
The story of Little Women will continue in just a moment. What does the name Mary mean to you? The name Don, the name Phil? You probably have friends with these names, but put them together, Mary, Don, Phil, add Dennis, Rochester, and Jack, and it means only one thing to everyone in America, the first name friends on the Jack Benny Show.
They're friends of all from 5 to 85. They bring their three priceless gifts of friendship, laughter, and originality to you on CBS every Sunday night. And now, back to Little Women by Louisa May Alcott.
The months that followed were filled with excitement and activity for everyone but Joe. To begin with, Mr. March was discharged from the army, and the family was grateful for his return. Meg, of course, was busy with her trousseau and the round of parties that preceded her marriage to Mr. Brooke, while Amy eagerly prepared for her trip to Europe with Aunt March. But amid all the feverish excitement and activity, Joe kept quietly to herself, withdrawing more and more into her attic room, spending more of a time writing. Finally, it was all over. They saw Meg married to Mr. Brooke and Amy off to Europe with Aunt March. And all this seemed to serve to mellow Joe, make her more serious, less of a tomboy. To tell the truth, she rather expected Laurie to speak to her on a subject they'd both been avoiding until then.
Joe, I'm not very good at this sort of thing. Oh, I know we're both young, we'd have to wait a while, but... Well, I think Grandfather's going to take me away on a trip, and I had to speak to you first. I have to tell you how I feel.
Please, Laurie, don't say any more.
Oh, I must. I've loved you since the very first day I saw you.
Oh, Laurie, we've had such good times together, and I wish I could tell you that I love you, but I can't. I love you as a sister would, not in any other way.
Joe, you can't mean that. Not when I love you so much.
You don't really love me, Laurie. I've been a good playmate, almost a brother to you. You like me a lot, as I like you. But that's all.
Well, of all the... I guess I know if I love a girl or not. I'm not that young.
You don't, Laurie. Really, you don't. You'll find someone else someday.
I won't. I'll never love anyone else as long as I live. And if you won't have me, well, whatever happens to me will be your fault.
Laurie! Laurie, where are you going?
To the devil!
So Laurie went off in high dudgeon. Later, Joe heard that he'd left with his grandfather on a trip to Europe. It was shortly after that that Joe decided she, too, had to leave home, go somewhere else, see life, meet people, learn about the world, and write. She obtained a position as governess to the children of Mrs. Kirk, a friend of her mother's who lived in New York, and the following fall she took up her new duties at Mrs. Kirk's boarding house. Her work was not hard, and she had plenty of time to write letters as well as stories. Her letters to Marmy and Beth were filled with hope and anticipation, and clearly showed that Joe was growing up.
My dearest Marmy and Beth, I must tell you about a man I met. He's a professor, Professor Varr. He lives here at Mrs. Kirk's and teaches the children. He's a foreigner, German or Austrian, I'm not sure which. And he knows all about life and literature and Europe. Dearest Marmy and Beth, Professor Varr seems to like my company. He's invited me to go to the art museum with him next Saturday. Went to the theater with Professor Varr. Saw an opera last night with Professor Varr. Oh, Marmy, New York is wonderful, and so is Professor Varr. Marmy, 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 I've sold two stories. Two of my stories are going to be published. I can't wait to tell Professor Varr. Professor Varr! Professor Varr!
Yeah?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had company.
No. Come in, Fräulein. Come in. This is a young friend of mine, Herr Vogel. Herr Vogel, may I present Fräulein March?
Hello.
How do you do?
Herr Vogel is a writer, Miss March. That is, he wants to be. We were just discussing one of his stories.
Oh, well, in that case, please excuse me.
No. Do not go. We are almost finished. But I have to say to Herr Vogel, you may hear too. You see, my boy, this kind of cheap sensationalism that you are writing is not art. You must not degrade yourself and your talent in this way just because it happens to sell and you make money. Either you are sincere about your writing or you are not, and there's no compromise. These kinds of stories are an insult to the intelligence. The clutching hand, the dark road of murder. This is not art. This is a terrible waste of a talent. Do you understand, my boy?
Yes, I think so, Professor.
Good. Go home now and forget about writing for money and write from your heart. Something you know about, something you feel deeply and sincerely.
I'll try, Professor, and thank you for your criticism. Well, I'm glad to have met you, Miss March. See you again, Professor. Goodbye.
Auf Wiedersehen. Yeah, a talented boy. He will write well one day. And now, will you join me for some tea, Miss March?
No, I don't think... If you'll excuse me.
Miss March?
Yes?
I would appreciate it very much if you could stay for a moment. There's something I have been wanting to say to you.
I think you've said all that's necessary, Professor Barr.
All? But I have said nothing to you. Nothing about how I really feel toward you.
How you feel toward me? How could you feel anything toward me? I'm one of those writers you were talking about. I write for money, and I write to sell my stories. I've sold two of them. See? I wanted you to read them, but not now. You wouldn't be interested. They'll only help Marmy and Father pay for food in the house and new clothes for Beth. They're not art, Professor, and they're sensational, just like Mr. Fogel.
Miss March, wait, please. Oh. Blundering jackass. You stupid, blundering idiot. Well, Professor Barr, now you have managed to hurt the one girl in your life you have ever loved.
Joe went home shortly after that. When she reread her stories and contemplated them soberly and thoughtfully, she realized that what the professor had said was true. She thought of him often and found that she missed him greatly. She missed talking to him, going to concerts and the theater. She missed just seeing him. Anyone but Joe would have realized that she'd fallen in love with Professor Barr. A few months later, the March family sustained its greatest shock. Little Beth died. Those last days of Beth's illness had a profound effect on Joe, and she realized perhaps for the first time that one can experience all the joys and sorrows of life in one's own home. She wrote a poem about it, a beautiful, sincerely written poem about her family, her sisters, and herself, the things she really knew about, the things she felt in her heart. She sent it off to a publisher and quite forgot about it, for almost immediately afterward, Meg came round to see her with some surprising news.
Meg, well, this is splendid. How are the babies?
They're fine, dear.
And Mr. Brooke?
He's fine, too. Joe?
Yes?
I had a letter today from Laurie.
Laurie?
He's coming home next week.
Bully, it'll be good to see him again.
Joe, he's married.
Married. Well, good for him. I always knew he'd find someone.
Yes, Joe, he found someone. He found someone in Europe.
In Europe?
Yes.
You mean Amy?
Yes, Joe. Amy.
Well, that's splendid. I am glad for them.
Then you're really happy about it?
Couldn't be happier. Say, this calls for a party. We'll have a big celebration. You and Brooke and Amy and Laurie and Marmy and Father. I'll arrange it.
That sounds like a wonderful idea. Let me know what I can do to help.
Absolutely nothing. This is one party I'll arrange, all by myself.
And it was a grand party. They laughed and cried and reminisced about the past, and everyone had a wonderful time. Then, just as the festivity reached its height, the doorbell rang. And when Joe went to the door and opened it, there stood...
Professor Barr.
Hello, Miss March.
Professor Barr. Oh, Professor Barr, do come in.
I was passing through your town on business and I... Oh, but you're having a party. I am intruding.
Not at all. Please, come in.
Well, I really came to give you this.
What is it?
It is a copy of your poem. I ran across it in the magazine and... I knew it was yours, even though it is only signed with initials. They are all there, yeah. You and Meg and Amy and Beth, yeah.
Beth.
Now you are writing, my dear. Now you are writing from the heart.
Professor, Beth is dead. She died shortly after I returned from New York.
My dear, I know how much you loved her, but may I say to you that Beth is not dead and will never be dead. You have immortalized her in your poem. Yeah.
Oh, Professor, can you ever forgive me for being so nasty and mean and horrid to you? You were right. You were absolutely right.
I was quite wrong in what I said to you. I should not have wasted my words with railing at the world and criticizing. I should have told you at once how very much I love you and how very much I want you to be my wife.
Oh?
I lost one opportunity. I must not lose this one. Will you marry me, Josephine?
Will I? Oh, isn't this just splendid? Come with me.
Oh, Papa Joy, you, your family, your friends...
You couldn't have come at a better time. Hey! Laurie, Meg, Amy, Father, Mommy, here's someone I've wanted you to meet for a long time. May I present my future husband, Professor Barr.
The story of Little Women was brought to life on Tell It Again by Jane Webb as Jo, Laurette Philbrant as Meg, Patty Chapman as Amy, and Karen Kester as Beth. Laurie was played by Peter Rankin, Marmee by Marjorie Bennett, Professor Barr by Shep Minken, and Marvin Miller was the narrator and played the role of Grandfather Lawrence. Music was by Del Castillo. Ralph Rose wrote and produced the transcribed free adaptation and directed the players. Next week, Tell It Again will dramatize. Toby Tyler's Adventures in the Circus. Join us then, won't you, when we tell it again. Every Sunday evening on most of these CBS stations, you'll find a wonderfully funny real-life family that makes everyone laugh. For Ozzie and Harriet, Ricky and David are father and mother and sons in real life, as well as in their program. And that's one of the big reasons why they have discovered the magic gift of laughter that they bring to you. Hear them tomorrow night as the boys involve Ozzie in an impossible Mother's Day scheme. John Jacob speaking. Now stay tuned for 5 minutes of the latest news and the Let's Pretend program, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.